I'll tell you something funny about this collection. The first title was Too Jewish.
Oh my goodness, really?
Don't you think the stories are really too Jewish?
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Warren Kozak, journalist and author of the new memoir on loss and recovery, Waving Goodbye. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom, v'chag Purim Sameach. A happy holiday of Purim. It is the wonderful, dizzy holiday of Purim today, the single most fun day in the entire Jewish year. The usual approach to our religion includes such important concepts as respect, reverence, and sanctity, and Judaism can be serious indeed. Today, however, is a reversal of all of that. Purim is our springtime blowout festival in which all bets are off, all seriousness forbidden. Actually, even betting, normally discouraged in Jewish tradition, is okay on Purim. Based on the events in the Book of Esther and the Hebrew Bible, the Tanakh, Purim celebrates the way that the Jewish Persian courtier Mordechai outwitted the evil Persian courtier Haman and saved our people from destruction. The great heroine of the story is Queen Esther, also known as Hadassah. We rejoice in this tale of switched fortunes and salvation from annihilation by chanting the whole Megillah. That's right, that's what it's called, literally the entire scroll of Esther, by drinking to excess. Again, not a typical Jewish tendency, but especially reserved on this day of wild partying, and eating to excess also. A very Jewish tendency all the time, actually. We bring friends and relatives shalach monas, mishloach manot, gifts of sweets, fruits, and nuts to make the holiday of Purim more festive still. On Purim, children and adults dress up in costume and act out the story of Purim, often in parody form with music and dance. It's a great way to embrace the joy of Judaism, to blow off steam, and generally just enjoy this first festival of the spring, even before it is technically springtime. Most of all, we Jews enjoy the delicious Hamantaschen pastries, those triangular cookies of much delight, and the best food known to all humanity. It's a great day to enjoy being Jewish. Now that's true especially at a time when we Jews feel challenged in an environment of rising anti-Semitism and brutal criticism of Israel. Well, it's particularly important today to have a day dedicated to celebrating this victory so long ago against what was, yes, an anti-Semitic attack. We've been through many hard times before in our people's history. We always survive and flourish. So in the spirit of Purim, and to play us in on this Purim morning, here's a Purim song that's a kind of anti-Purim parody original song from the talented people of West Bloomfield, Michigan's Temple Israel. It's called An Original Song in a Purim Spiel.
Can you try an original song in a Purim Spiel? How would it make you feel?
We can always sing the Beatles, and the rabbis will be willing. And I know that we can count on the complete works of Bob Dylan.
We can film it on an iPhone and do half the tune in Yiddish. But if we don't set the words to Gangnam Style, will they gossip at the Kiddish?
Can you try spiel. Tell me, how would it make you feel? And can you write brand new music to go in a Purim video? Sadly, no one seems to know.
We can parody an opera in the style of Mario Lanza, but can an unknown song go viral? There's no relevant response.
We could all dress up like Vashti and play our crackers right till dawn, just as long as Esther's singing to some sweet Celine Dion. Tell us, how did it make you feel?
That was, yes, an original song in a Purim spiel, Chag Sameach. Don't miss Purim for Grown-Ups at our own Congregation Beit Simcha tonight, starring comedian Rabbi Bob Alper. That's tonight, March 24th, 6:30 p.m., 12111 North La Jolla. You can get tickets and all details at BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our guest this morning is journalist and author Warren Kozak. His beautiful new memoir grew out of profound loss, and he tells how his Judaism and other things helped him deal with grief and mourning and re-embrace life. Warren Kozak's a wonderful guy. Meet him when we come back in just a moment here on Too Jewish. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520
888-7470.
We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish Art guests this morning. Warren Kozak is a prominent journalist and the author of a remarkable memoir, Waving Goodbye. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning, Rabbi, and thank you for having me on your show.
So tell us about the origin of Waving Goodbye.
It's a book I never expected to write.
Or perhaps wanted to, is maybe the best way to put it.
Both. I certainly didn't want to, and I never expected to. During that first year, which was so difficult after my wife passed away, people brought books, and I even sought out different books. And a lot of the books didn't help. And one of the reasons was they were written by psychologists, psychiatrists, some clergy, but the doctors wrote in a very academic style, and my brain just wasn't functioning. These books may have helped others, and everyone deals with this in a different way, but I found them impenetrable. And it was only about 5 years later when I had, I could look back and see how I had evolved over those 5 years, that I sat down and started to write, and the book kind of poured out of me. And I wrote it for people who have lost a spouse and or lost someone, and told them in very short sentences, short chapters, it's a short book, what happened, what helped, and what didn't help.
I'm going to ask a question about kind of an obscure point. Your opening quotation is from maybe my favorite author and a past guest of Two Jewish, Mark Helprin. In Sunlight and in Shadow. Tell us why you use that quote.
Wow. Well, we sure share that feeling about Mark Helprin. He is amazing. And amazing. How wonderful to have had him on your show.
It was. It was great.
Yeah. I had two quotes I was toying with, and they both hit home. One was from a Hemingway novel. And my younger sister, who is a retired librarian, said, no, you don't want to use that one because it's a rough book and the characters were not nice people. I love Helprin. I love everything he writes. And boy, we could just talk about his writing. But I'm going to just ask you a question. Do you read his short story, Perfection?
Say the last word again. I'm sorry.
It was Perfection in a book called The Pacific.
And yeah. It's a phenomenal story.
It was one of the most brilliant looks at the Holocaust through the 1956 New York Yankees. And if you think that is strange,
you have to read the story. I agree with you. Although I first met him through the Schroeder Spitz, the first story of his that I ever read, which is really almost a novella, which is also about loss and recovery. I don't know if you've read that one, but
I have not, but now I will.
Now you must. Yeah.
Yeah. And this book, In Sunlight and in Shadow, is all about loss in different ways. Right. It's about a soldier who comes back from World War II and is trying to figure out his life. And then he meets someone who just, it's one of the great love stories of all time.
It is. And it begins with, as you said, loss. We will talk much more about loss and probably literature with our guest this morning, Warren Kozak, here. His book is called Waving Goodbye. We'll be back in a moment on Two Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a wonderful array of services, classes, and events this spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the Tucson metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in person. Call 520-276-5675. Religious school is available for school-aged children and grandchildren. Come to our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience, confirmation and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. Coming up tonight, join us Sunday, March 24th, Purim for Adults, with nationally renowned comedian Rabbi Bob Alper at 6:30 p.m., a fabulous night of humor, music, Hamantaschen, drinks, and Purim joy. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events open to everyone. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m., Shabbat celebration services with an Oneg Shabbat to follow. Saturday Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Torah study beforehand, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson, has all of our services. All of our Adult Education Academy classes, including Torah study, are live and on Zoom. Access those by going to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our wonderful religious school is available in person and on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school and Torah Tikes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, and, of course, all of our services in person and on Facebook Live, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. And don't miss Purim for Grownups tonight with comedian Rabbi Bob Alper, 6:30 p.m. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing Jewish congregation and community in all of Southern Arizona. If you've got a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or akvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, JewishRadio18 at Gmail. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You hear all past and present shows through the website, 2JewishRadio.com, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 200,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review 2Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments are helpful. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking last week about the relationship between the United Nations, the non-governmental organizations. You mentioned the quasi-non-governmental organizations, Quangos, and then governments as well, which have their own institutional approaches to problems. All of these are supposed to be working on complicated problems in concert, exactly. Give us an example and maybe tell us how this all kind of plays out.
Okay, so for example, let's say there's a crisis in West Africa. There's a violent civil war in Liberia, and there's tons of refugees pouring over the borders into neighboring countries.
Which has happened.
So sometimes governments can't be effective in dealing with the situation because, for example, when I was posted in the Ivory Coast, which is right next door to Liberia, and the civil war was at its height, the U.S. embassy was responsible for about six square blocks of territory that the government of Liberia still controlled. The rest was in the hands of the rebels. So the U.S. government didn't have much sway or say over what was happening in the rest of the country. But we were able to provide support to various relief agencies that are non-governmental organizations like Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, the World Food Program. Now, some of these have some distant UN sponsorship. Some just have a lot of ongoing operational support from like-minded governments. Médecins Sans Frontières technically is French, so the French government helps it a lot, but so do we. And it's a you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back situation, in the sense that when I was posted in Pakistan and had to visit the various warring factions in Afghanistan. We were not allowed, because of internal U.S. government policy, to take a U.S. government vehicle, either a land vehicle or an aircraft, into Afghanistan. So we had to mooch off the Red Cross, Catholic Relief Services, all these NGOs who didn't have necessarily diplomatic immunity, but whose value and whose neutrality was not questioned by anybody. So we would mooch rides in their aircraft and their land vehicles and whatever, and it was in their interest to help the U.S. government as much as they could, because someday they might turn to us for a favor. You know, they lose a passport, whatever. There are all kinds of favors that outer arms of the U.S. government can do for these organizations overseas. Now, at its best, the way the international community functions is as follows, at its best, and rarely achieves its best.
Of course.
The Danes have always been particularly conscious of environmental issues. So in a Danish city called Aarhus, they negotiated for years something called the Aarhus Convention, which had to do with constructing a model of how civil society should handle environmental questions and environmental policy. So there was, for example, a requirement that any government decision taken that affected the environment in any way, shape, or form had to be brought before the public, voted on, allowed for public input, have hearings, et cetera, et cetera. This was a long, complicated convention, which was eventually signed by about 60 states. And I was at the signing ceremony in Aarhus. But so were a lot of NGOs, because to implement this Aarhus Convention in countries that had no history of civil societies and no meaningful presence of non-governmental organizations was really tricky. So the few non-governmental organizations, I mean, in Turkmenistan, for example, back in that day, there was only one non-governmental organization, and it was environmental. And its representative was like a utility infielder. He fulfilled many non-environmental tasks on behalf of building civil society. And we would have every year or two, like an Aarhus Convention implementation review, and countries would have to report on how they were doing and what progress they were making. So that was an ideal interchange between governments, non-governmental organizations, and UN agencies as well.
Tom, we'll explore maybe another, maybe more direct kind of aid situation next week. Thanks so much. We'll talk then.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Moshe looks very unhappy. When the rabbi asks him what's wrong, Moshe responds, "Rabbi, I'm 35 years old. I want to get married. Every time I bring a girl home, my mother doesn't like her. Rabbi, what can I do?" Rabbi thinks for a bit and says, "Find a girl that looks like your mother, talks like your mother, acts like your mother, and dresses like your mother. Maybe then your mother will like her." Moshe says, "Rabbi, what a great idea." A week later, he comes back to the rabbi, and he's even more forlorn. The rabbi asks, "Moshe, what's wrong?" And he says, "I found a girl. She looks like my mother, dresses like my mother, sounds like my mother." The rabbi asks, "That's great. What's the problem?" And Moshe replies, "My father didn't like her." Yes, that was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. 12 years ago, this week's portion of Tzav was my own son Gabe's bar mitzvah portion. That means that I was immersed in listening to him chant it for well over a year. We would often work in the car as I would drive him and his siblings from home to school to Hebrew school to chorus to baseball practice to whatever they had going. And Gabe would chant, I would listen, sometimes offer corrections, and then we'd repeat the process many times until he knew the Aliyah, the particular portion, well. And then we'd go on to the next Aliyah. That's a long, challenging, ultimately very fulfilling process essential to learning this ancient skill and applying it in synagogues today. Superficially, it amounts to working on the mere mechanics that help a student learn how to chant successfully from the Torah at his or her bar bat mitzvah. But there's something much greater within these technical skills and that kind of training. You see, even the mere mechanics of the chanting of Torah are very elaborate. First, you must be able to read the Hebrew in a section correctly and with fluency. Next, you apply the trope, the cantillation marks, that delineate the proper way to chant each word, to sing the text, the Hebrew text, the sacred text, correctly. And then after many repetitions aloud of the Aliyah from a vocalized, cantillated text, you are ready to test your memory and work on learning how to chant Torah from the Torah itself. You begin using a printed book called a tikkun, whose pages look just like the columns of a Sefer Torah. Finally, after many more practice repetitions and corrections working from the tikkun, well, then you are ready to chant directly from the Torah scroll and do so in a service. This elaborate learning process, the ritual of learning to chant Torah, calls to mind the words of our weekly portion of Tzav. For Tzav in Leviticus establishes even more ancient rituals, those of the animal and grain sacrifices that were brought to the tabernacle by our ancestors in order to achieve a variety of spiritual purposes. There are offerings of connection with God as atonement for sin, to relieve guilt, to give thanks, and for various other reasons. Each sacrifice is described carefully and systematically, and its purpose, and especially its process, delineated in precise detail. It is the specific adherence to process that is so crucial here. By our own ability and commitment to follow these deliberate steps, the effort that is essential to completing the worship rituals properly, we are able to assure that close, careful, consistent labor produces the desired result, holiness. Without the physical bringing of animal or cereal sacrifices, this is actually quite close to the way that all mystical traditions approach their own rituals today. Disciplined effort and step-by-step work create a consciousness of the divine presence. Meticulous attention to small details is integral to achieving enlightenment and sanctity. Regular, long-term commitment to the process is indispensable. Frankly, that's how we achieve nearly everything valuable in life. The dedication of our ancestors in this portion of Tzav may have been directed towards rituals we no longer observe, but the process they created reminds us today that we must exert careful, precise, consistent, persistent effort to achieve whatever we wish to accomplish. Good things happen when we work hard and carefully in order to make them happen. As the old Dodgers general manager Branch Rickey used to say, luck is the residue of design. Our Israelite predecessors may have said it differently. God favors us when we observe perfectly, correctly. But the message is really the same. Care, attention to detail, effort, commitment. That was how we gained God's blessings in ancient times. Frankly, it's still how we do it today. When we come back in a moment, our guest, Warren Kozak, shares how he was able to grow from loss to life again, and the ways that Judaism helped him with that process, all included in his new memoir, Waving Goodbye. Hear all about it when he rejoins us in a moment on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
More than 1,200 Jewish Hollywood creative types have signed on to a statement rejecting the speech criticizing Israel delivered by the Zone of Interest director Jonathan Glazer at the Academy Awards this month. The signatories include the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel writer Amy Sherman-Palladino, horror director Eli Roth, and actress Jennifer Jason Leigh, as well as several show business figures, Deborah Messing, Brett Gelman, Michael Rappaport, many others, who have been prominent defenders of Israel during its war against Hamas. In the speech, Glazer said he and the others accepting the Oscar for Best International Feature for their Holocaust film refute our Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people, whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza. Glazer's comments drew fierce criticism, both over his phrasing that caused some to believe he was rejecting his Jewish identity and over his apparently intended meaning that Israel's war in Gaza is characterized by the same kind of dehumanization that made the Holocaust possible. The statement, organized by these United Jewish Writers, a coalition formed shortly after Hamas's October 7th attack on Israel, as the Hollywood unions were divided over whether or even how to issue statements condemning the attack and supporting Israel. Well, this group aims to demonstrate the scope of dissent within Hollywood on this question. We refute our Jewishness being hijacked for the purpose of drawing a moral equivalence between a Nazi regime that sought to exterminate a race of people and an Israeli nation that seeks to avert its own extermination, their statement says. Goes on to lament the death of Palestinian civilians, but lays the blame squarely with Hamas, not Israel. It also interprets Glazer's mention of occupation to apply to the entire state of Israel. The use of words like occupation to describe an indigenous Jewish people defending a homeland dating back thousands of years, which has been recognized as a state by the United Nations, distorts history, they say. It gives credence to the modern blood libel that fuels a growing anti-Jewish hatred around the world, in the United States, and in Hollywood. The statement concludes, the current climate of growing anti-Semitism only underscores the need for the Jewish state of Israel, a place which will always take us in, as no state did during the Holocaust depicted in Mr. Glazer's own film. Well, the stories about sexual and gender harassment and misconduct at American rabbinical seminaries and in the movements continue to appear in news that has shaken the already quite shaky conservative movement. American Jewish University last year hired a law firm specializing in investigations of gender-based misconduct following complaints against the two deans who have run the university's rabbinical school for more than two decades. American Jewish University is affiliated with conservative Judaism. It confirmed the law firm Cozen O'Connor's Institutional Response Group is conducting the investigation. AJU sold its flagship campus in Bel Air last month to the neighboring Stephen S. Wise Temple. Rabbi Bradley Shavit Artson, dean of the Ziegler School of Rabbinic Studies, and his deputy, Rabbi Cheryl Peretz, are also the subject of a probe by the Ethics Committee of the Rabbinical Assembly, the Association of Conservative Rabbis, over roughly the same set of allegations. The investigations were launched after a group of former rabbinical students who attended Ziegler Rabbinical School at different times over the past 20 years came together to address what they describe as a shared experience of male favoritism and disrespectful treatment by Rabbis Artson and Peretz at the Los Angeles Seminary. In interviews and a formal complaint to the Ethics Committee, the former students alleged that the two deans presided over a sexist and homophobic campus culture rife with inappropriate jokes, that the deans mishandled at least one case of sexual harassment between students. The former students cite examples of individuals whose experience at the school led them to leave Ziegler for other rabbinical schools or abandon their dreams of becoming rabbis altogether. I want a future where women and people of all genders are able to study at Ziegler without a culture of misogyny, said Shana Dollinger, who left Ziegler last year after a little more than a semester and has since enrolled in Hebrew Union College, one of my alma maters, the Reform Seminary. Sharing her experience with other former Ziegler students galvanized them to campaign for change. The school needs to hold itself accountable to be able to create safe spaces and raise the next generation of rabbis who are committed to the values of the conservative movement in the Jewish community. That's not going to happen if they push people away like I was pushed away, said Dollinger. In a written statement, American Jewish University said it is deeply committed to creating a safe, welcoming, and inclusive environment for every student, and that there are ranges of measures in place at AJU to foster a safe climate for all students, staff, and faculty. Founded in 1996, the Ziegler Rabbinical School has served as a West Coast alternative to the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York, JTS, where conservative rabbis were ordained for a very long time. Rabbi Bradley Shavit Artson, a past guest of Two Jewish, by the way, became dean in 1999 after establishing himself 7 years earlier as one of the most progressive leaders in the conservative movement. He wrote a proposal for gay religious equality that was rejected at the time by the Committee on Law and Standards of Conservative Judaism. Artson's progressive spiritual orientation served as a powerful recruitment tool when conservative Judaism embraced gay ordination and marriage. But over time, Ziegler Rabbinical School's appeal eroded. There's a drop-off in rabbinical school enrollment across all denominations. And, well, the conservative movement is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. Ziegler School is undergoing great turbulence. 2 years ago, Ziegler slashed tuition in hopes of making rabbinical school more attractive. But if the move has had an impact, it has been tiny. The new rabbinical student enrollment at Ziegler Rabbinical School is a total of 8 people this year. Count them, 8. That's up from 7 the year before. Ziegler School also lost its longtime home after AJU sold the Bel Air campus in order to focus on digital offerings, online education, and leasing space for Ziegler classes and programs in an office building in L.A. Shayna Dollinger was 22 when she entered Ziegler in the fall of 2022, just 2 years ago, and immediately encountered what she describes as an unsafe atmosphere. A fellow student, male and much older than she, subjected classmates, including Dollinger, to an unending stream of sexual jokes and comments. Dollinger said that after she told the male student to stop, he escalated his comments and increasingly directed them at her. In her view, she sought intervention from the administration. "I cannot continue to learn under these circumstances," Dollinger wrote in an email in September of 2022, complaining about the student. "I worry now about his next sexualized comment, his next sexual advance, my inability to socialize, eat with my classmates free of his constant offenses. On a deeper level, my ability to move to a spiritual place is compromised by the climate he's created in our class." The associate dean, Rabbi Peretz, appeared to take the issue seriously and summoned the male student to a meeting. But the alleged misbehavior did not stop, continuing even after Rabbi Artson returned from a medical leave and after the campus's Title IX discrimination coordinator got involved. Dollinger eventually came to believe the administrators would not take necessary action. Towards the end of the semester, a fellow classmate filed a formal sexual harassment complaint against that same student. Dollinger said she was told he would not be allowed to return to campus until the investigation was complete, but when the next semester began a few weeks later, well, the investigation was ongoing and the student was back. "I was enraged and afraid and felt betrayed," Dollinger wrote. The student was eventually expelled, according to multiple sources, but by that time Dollinger had left for Hebrew Union College. Seeking support during her ordeal, Dollinger reached out to Karen McGinnity, who launched a Jewish hashtag MeToo reckoning in 2018 with a piece detailing her own experience of sexual harassment by a prominent Jewish scholar. In early 2023, McGinnity introduced Dollinger to two rabbis who had attended Ziegler years earlier. Danya Rutenberg, another past guest of Two Jewish, by the way, who attended Ziegler from 2002 to 2008, and Lauren Henderson, who transferred from Ziegler to JTS after 2 years in 2012. Another bit of information, I knew Lauren Henderson as a religious school student in my congregation in South Carolina about 1 million years ago. In any case, the four of them got on a Zoom call. As she told her story, Danya and I, our jaws dropped that the same stuff is still going on, said Henderson, today a rabbi in suburban Atlanta. "When I was a student, I encountered a very male-dominated, fraternity-like environment. There was this kind of underlying toxic masculinity culture of people making women get back in the kitchen jokes in class. We realized it was a pattern, and it's not getting any better. The four women began talking to other alumni of the program, eventually finding 20 former students with a similar outlook on Ziegler's culture. In April 2023, the group sent a letter to the Vod HaKavod, the Ethics Committee of Conservative Rabbis, outlining their view of the problem, demanding American Jewish University embark on a course of apology and correction. Dollinger followed up in September with a formal letter of complaint that has triggered the beginning of an investigation, an ethics investigation by the committee, which has jurisdiction over Artson and Peretz as rabbis, although no formal power over American Jewish University. The Rabbinical Assembly has responded, saying, "We maintain an ongoing desire to ensure a safe and appropriate environment for all conservative Masorti staff, congregants and clergy, especially its students and young people, in an effort to make certain all spaces at our movement are sensitive to diverse needs, experiences, and identities." Well, by August of last year, AJU had retained the Cozen O'Connor Law Firm for its investigation. A survey with questions about gender-related misconduct at Ziegler was sent to students and alumni. Some were later interviewed by lawyers at the firm. One respondent wrote anonymously about the different attitudes of teachers towards male and female students. He said he witnessed female students inappropriately lectured regarding marriage and having children. There was also a sense that I, as a male future rabbi, was somehow more important or had more potential than female students, he wrote. There was a reflection, even amongst some female clergy, that it was the men in the class that were reflected being full rabbis, and the women were second class. Oy, what a mess. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Warren Kozak has written an extraordinary book called Waving Goodbye about loss and recovery. He is a prominent journalist who worked writing all those great monologues, I guess. I don't know that you hear TV newscasters give. He has written for The Wall Street Journal, The National Review, The New York Sun. Lectured widely. He's the author of four acclaimed works of nonfiction and writes regularly. Tell us a little bit about how your career as a journalist evolved, how you became a writer for anchors at ABC and other places.
It started when I was 8 years old, and I came home one day. I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I turned on the TV, and I was probably looking for cartoons, and I found something called the Huntley Brinkley Report, which for anyone younger than me, that is the NBC Nightly News. And I was absolutely fascinated by it, that they could bring the entire world into my home in Milwaukee. And I kind of wanted to work for Huntley Brinkley when I was 8.
Probably a little premature.
Yeah, my parents didn't want me to leave quite that early, I guess. So, but after school, after I finished school, I came to New York and was very lucky to find a job. And I eventually became a writer for some of the different anchors, most of the different anchors at ABC. I never got to NBC, but I was very happy at ABC and did some various other things in journalism. I left journalism, I will tell you this, about 25 years ago when I saw it evolving. And I've worked for the last 25 years for a man who is, I always call him the biggest mensch in the world. His name is Ronald Lauder, and he is very involved in the Jewish world.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and does a lot of other things. And I have had the great fortune to work with him on these things that I care about deeply. He's the president of the World Jewish Congress, and he goes all over the world helping Jewish communities. I would like to say one other thing about this man. When my wife got sick, I would travel. He travels a lot, and I traveled with him. And he said, "I don't want you traveling with me. I'm going to be too nervous if something happens while you're with me. So just stay here and work remotely." And this was long before COVID. And I would be sitting in her hospital room typing out things on my computer. But because of this, I could be with her for the last 3 years of her life. And I was thinking, if I was still at ABC, I would have lost my job and my insurance, or I would have not been with her. And I think one of the important points that I bring out in the book was how grateful I am, in spite of the bad thing that happened, that I had some tremendous support in a lot of different ways. And I'm very, very grateful for that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just a minor personal note. I met Ron Lauder at Auschwitz on the 75th anniversary of the commemoration of the liberation of the camp.
That was quite an event.
Yeah, so you were there.
I was there, and one of the... It's just for your audience, you can go on YouTube and see his speech, and one of the things that fascinates me is there's a cutaway shot near the end of the speech of all the European leaders who were sitting there in a row,
yeah,
looking so uncomfortable. It was like the last place they wanted to be.
Yeah.
And it for me, that said everything.
The intensity of the time after the death, after, and particularly after the Shiva ends, really comes through in the book, that sense of being alone. What helped you move from that?
What I write about in the book was, after the Shiva ended, my daughter went
back to college, right? That's,
yeah,
Claire, right?
Right. Claire went back to college, and I took her back. I didn't want her to travel alone after this. She insisted that it would be better for her to be... I asked if she wanted to take the semester off, and she said no. She thought it would be better, and I think she was right to be surrounded by her friends and have things to do. What I write about is that I just turned right around and came back to New York, where we live, and I turned the key in the apartments, and I thought things were bad before. That was absolutely the worst moment, because you go into this empty house, and it is so, so empty. And one of the things, this is going to sound odd, I think, but one of the things that really struck me a couple of years ago when the Queen, Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth, lost her husband. I think it's Prince Philip, right? It was during COVID, and there was a picture of her sitting all alone in the cathedral. And I'm thinking, even the Queen, probably the most public person in the world,
right,
is all alone. And she's going back, even with all the servants and footmen and God knows what. She's going to be all alone in her quarters, and this man that has been with her for, God, it was like 60 years, yeah, is no longer there. It hits us all. It hits us all that way. So your question was, what helped me? And I think just putting on my socks every morning and just forcing myself to kind of act human, even though I didn't feel that way. And eventually it becomes normal again. It took a while. It took that, you know, I think those old Jews were brilliant. And then when they figured out the 1 year of mourning,
right.
Yeah. And I think after a year, I did start feeling better. I remember the rabbi coming over to me, you know, saying, you know, your period of mourning is over, get up, and may all go well. And it sounded almost kind of rough, but it wasn't. It was met with great caring, I think. You know, it's, you got to get up.
I have one last professional question. I like to say, as a rabbi, with people, that the end of the year is when we move from mourning to memory, that we're trying to, not only trying to, hopefully succeeding in moving from that depth of loss to bringing what's best about that love, that person, into our lives on a daily basis in a positive way. Is that true for you?
Yes, it is. I still miss her a lot, but it is all, I'd say it's all positive. And that goes back to what I was saying about being grateful that she was in my life, that I have this fabulous daughter that we raised together. And, you know, I think it's going to be very rough when, you know, Claire gets married and, you know, she won't be there in all the big events. But, you know, it is part of life. And as they say, it's, you know, part of the price of a good marriage, I guess. You know, it'll hit you just as hard on the other end.
I feel like we've just, you know, kind of scratched the surface. The book is called Waving Goodbye. It's a great book. It's also a very referable, easy to read, accessible book. A point that you make about some of the other grief books not being so much. Tell us, where can people find out more about you, Warren? Where can people find out more about Waving Goodbye?
Well, you can pre-order it. It's out on April 9th, and you can get it on Amazon. And I do have a website, warrenkozak.com, K-O-Z-A-K, and people are welcome to look at it there. And in the end, I need to say, Rabbi, I wrote this for people going through exactly this. If it can help someone, that would make me feel better.
Warren, thank you for a great visit and I think a really valuable book, and a valuable book about coping with loss that I think will help many, many people. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Rabbi. I really appreciate it as well.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways, and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Caroline Cusin Pritchard, author of the new children's book, Where's Poppy, which is also about surviving loss, but also about Pesach. You'll see. Join us at Congregation Beit Simcha each Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning, 2, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush in person and on Facebook. And come to Purim for Grownups featuring comedian Rabbi Bob Alpert tonight, Sunday, 6:30 p.m. at 12111 North La Jolla at Tangerine. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org and get your tickets. Our playout today on this holiday of Purim, well, it's not a Purim song. It's instead Israel's entry into the Eurovision contest this year. Eden Golan singing the excellent song Hurricane. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, but especially a Chag Purim Sameach, a week we pray profoundly of justice and peace, and today especially of joy.
Writer of my symphony, play with me, look into my eyes and see. People walk away but never say goodbye. Someone stole the moon tonight, took my light. Everything is black and white. Who's the fool who told you boys don't cry? Hours and hours and powers. Life is no game, but it's ours while the time goes wild. Every day I'm losing my mind, holding on in this mysterious ride, dancing in the storm. I got nothing to hide. Take it.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.